Good morning, good morning, good morning. I'm Babs Rawls-Ivy, and
I'm Jeff Grant, and welcome to
Criminal Justice Insider.
Sponsored by
the New Haven, the Greater Foundation for Greater New Haven. More now than ever.
No, now more than ever.
Now more than ever.
And Family Reentry, serving the justice community since 1984.
Hey, this is our first show back in the new year.
It is.
And on top of a crazy bomb snowstorm.
This is our bomb cyclone edition of Criminal Justice Insider. No, the truth is, Bab, we should tell anybody who's actually listening this morning, we should tell them that as of an hour and a half ago, the show was not going to happen. But we texted one another.
Let me tell you something about Jeff Grant. Jeff Grant is a trooper. Like, if I have to be, if the zombie apocalypse happens today, Jeff is on my team because he, Jeff is like, listen, we're going to do this. He called me this morning at 7:30. He texted me, called me. I was like, okay. He's like, the roads are good from where I'm at. And I was like, you know what? If he's coming from Fairfield County.
Litchfield County.
Litchfield County.
Litchfield, yeah.
God, Lord, bless you.
Yeah.
I was like, so if you're coming from Litchfield County, I should be able to get from Bellevue Road.
Well, we should let everyone know that despite all the promotion we did, our guests today are not going to be with us because of the snow.
Yes. Senator Chris Murphy is stranded at an airport somewhere. Where's his flight?
Exactly. We heard from his people. He has people.
Mm-hmm.
And
we got people too, me and you.
We do have people, but not like his people. And so his flight's delayed, so he's not going to be able to call in this morning. And Dr. Danielle Cooper.
Yes. I called her. I don't know. I talked to her. What is today? Friday? What is today? Friday.
Friday.
I talked to her just the other day at the height of the storm. And I said, listen, I don't think we're going to go on because of the weather. And, you know, and there's parking bans, so you can't really park in places. So I'm in the lot today.
I'm in the lot, too.
But I'm in the lot down the street because I grabbed the wrong bag this morning, so I couldn't, whatever. So I just had a little cash. And I was like, I'm going to park in the lot. So we thought we would take the time today to just recap the stuff that we post on Facebook, because people love the stuff that we post up on Facebook.
Yeah.
And we get all the criminal justice information, like stuff that you didn't even know you wanted to know, we post up. That's happening all around the country.
Yeah. And I would say that we have different buckets that we're interested in. Certainly anything that's Connecticut criminal justice is right up at the top.
Yes.
We have a particular interest in white collar crime because we were both incarcerated for white collar crime. So mm-hmm. So that's kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that's interesting around the country, you know, we try to curate it so we're just not becoming a repository of every single thing that happens. But
right. Yes, we are purposeful and mindful.
Yeah, we are. We are.
How about the stuff that we post? Good morning, Andrew, if you're listening in.
Andrew?
Andrew's our touchstone. So
he is.
So we have to say good morning. He and I jumped in the in Long Island Sound together.
I saw that. What's that about?
I don't know. You know, it's a good friend when you can call somebody up and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing this thing. You want to do it? And they don't blink an eye. They just said, yeah, I'm in.
Wait. Whose idea was it to take a polar plunge
It was mine.
It was your idea.
It was on my bucket list. So I figured, well, this might be a good time to do it, not thinking that this is the coldest it's ever been.
Ever been. It's on my list, too, with the word that rhymes with bucket. Two words.
So, I don't know. Andrew, he jumped. He jumped in. And wait, my daughter and I, Marco, jumped in. He was behind us because I saw the news feed because we were on the news.
Yeah.
He was behind us swimming. We were just like
he's a real adventurer.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, you know.
So that's why I was like, I was holding his hand to get in the water because I was like, woo. And then I got in, my daughter and I got in. And then he was behind us and we just got out. He was still in the water swimming around and I was like, what is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And
God bless him.
And you were in the Daily Nutmeg.
Yay!
Was it yesterday or the day before?
I don't know. Yesterday, I think.
Yeah, it was a nice picture of you, too.
It was.
A really nice picture.
Kathy Zepio, who just took the job over at Daily Nutmeg.
Mm-hmm.
She's a church sister of mine. Mm-hmm. We go to Church of the Redeemer together. And she's a writer. She has a book out.
Mm-hmm.
She's a noted writer at that. So she called me up and she said, you know what? I'd like to do a piece on the inner city and you. So I was like, okay. And it was the same day that the Community Foundation people came over and snapped up their little pictures. So that's why you see the same outfit.
Oh, is that right? Oh, good.
The same outfit with no makeup. So yeah, so that was a nice piece on the inner city. And it was well done, and I was very pleased.
Yeah, I think that what people probably don't, they might kind of know, but what they don't really know is how many hats you wear. And
yeah,
and how many different kind of places that you are a person of influence.
Well.
Well, I mean, the truth is that, you know, on your current resume of being editor in chief of
the Black Paper
City and the inner city and at the New Haven Independent and at the radio station and a deacon at the church or what do you call it? Is it a deacon? What do you call it there?
Deacon. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on hiatus from church though right now, Jeff.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Just because I just have too much. That's another story for another day.
You know, it's funny. You know, we for those of you out there who don't know, that we run a white collar support group on Monday nights online.
Mm-hmm.
And this Monday, our first meeting of the year will be our 84th weekly meeting.
Oh my gosh!
I know, it's unbelievable.
84.
84 meetings, and believe me, when we started it, we had not even a hope that we would be able to have that many meetings. But the technology has improved now where you can have 25 people on video at the same time because you have to log in. So you either log in on a phone or a computer with a camera,
mm-hmm.
or you can call in from your phone if you don't want to actually be, you know, your face to be online. And we have people from all over the country. I mean, at this point, we've had, when I say 15 states of people, you know, maybe more, you know, anywhere from every time zone. And we log on, and it's a kind of a support group. I would say it's not 12-step, but it's not that far from a 12-step kind of a concept. And because most people who have these issues are living in isolation and shame and guilt, and they don't really have people to talk to.
And I don't think people think white-collar criminals have that same experience. I think people think that white-collar criminals get a slap on the wrist and go back to their lives.
Mm.
I think that's the prevailing thought.
I don't think people know a lot about it. You know, I think that it's like anything else in the world. We hold people with affluence, you know, with money up on a certain pedestal for some bizarre reason I don't understand. But, you know, it's lifestyles of the rich and famous, and in some sick way as a society, we're waiting to see people fall. And then because, you know, it's the car wreck on the side of the road. And then when we do fall, somehow our humanity comes out of it. And there's not a lot of compassion or empathy or understanding that there's children involved who've been hurt and spouses who are innocent, who've been hurt. And even the actors themselves, the people who've done the things that are will put them in prison or at least will get them convicted. Most of these people have underlying issues of low self-esteem and addiction and mental health issues and acted desperately. You know, I would say most of them, you know, I've worked with hundreds at this point. Most of them, these are, you know, this is not the way that they would choose to live their life.
Right.
But their circumstances kind of dictated, you know, they get into these hedge funds or something where it's go, do anything. And that's the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm not making excuses for anybody, you know, I mean, I certainly made bad choices, but I don't think we're doing them a favor as a society in either how we lift them up or how we look at them when they fall.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I'm just always sort of mindful of when I see, folks who are the white collar criminals versus anybody else, and it's always such a huge gap between, you know, I think people can sort of wrap their brains around people who have drug issues or whatever, but they cannot wrap their brains around people who have drug issues but commit a crime in a different sort of, not because they're not committing drug crimes. They're committing crimes as a result or as a part of the drug issue.
You know, I promote the white collar and nonviolent online group and the ministry we have. And I put something out on there on social media not that long ago. I can't remember. And we heard from Shaka Senor. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, Shaka's done great things. And, you know, he's certainly a power of example of how you can write your life after, I think it was a murder conviction and mm-hmm. 7 years in solitary. He has an incredible story. In fact, he was a keynote speaker at one of our events a couple of years ago. And he wrote me and he said, you know, that he thinks that I'm doing the criminal justice community an injustice by having a ministry that's only for white collar criminals and nonviolent criminals. And I, you know, I told him, you know, I wrote back to him. I said, I think you're missing the point. I think the point is that not that violent criminals shouldn't be treated with compassion and care and being given services. And certainly as executive director of family reentry, that's how I spend most of my time dealing mm-hmm. with mostly inner city issues. And a lot of that is drugs or some form of violence. But these are very underserved communities. You know, the white collar communities is tremendously underserved and actually has problems that are unique to themselves. You know, and I pointed out how, like, women, for example, have their own issues that men can't possibly understand.
Exactly.
So we wouldn't chastise the Women's Prison Association for being only for women.
Right.
I mean, there's no question that they have specific issues.
Well, I mean, I think that's a real point. And I think I could see how people can sort of feel like, well, the white collar folks are positioning themselves to be different than the other folks. And I don't think that's the case. It's just a different set of circumstances that needs to be addressed that aren't being addressed. And, you know, my issues weren't drug issues. So I don't need to go sit in a drug support group.
You know, the first time I found out, that it was kind of thrown up in my face that there are real difference in these categories, is that I wrote a column about Piper Kerman when she wrote the book The Orange is the New Black, and I talked about how I admire her as being a thought leader and being a leader out there, and I categorized her as a fellow white collar criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote back to me immediately and she said she's not white collar, she's nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
Cuz she was a, you know,
she was
a drug mule. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it was the first time I had to realize, this is maybe 5 years ago, and I realized, well, you know, even in that, the world probably has more compassion for someone who was a drug mule than for a white collar criminal. And she was right on top of it. I mean, she knows. I mean, she's someone who's published a book and a TV show and all, and so she really understood the category. And much more than I did at the time. So,
yes.
You know, since then, obviously, I've spent a lot of time in it. But it was, you know, it's a really awakening for me that she understands exactly who she is and how she fits into this ecosystem. So, yeah, I'd like to think that we've come a long way with that, too.
I think we have. I mean, I think we are coming a long way.
Yeah, I think
having these bigger conversations about criminal justice and inclusivity of everybody's issues is a good thing, because I think there's a lot of people who suffer in silence.
Yeah,
and not just the people who committed the crimes, but family members, you know, who have to go out mm-hmm. and be in the community, and children who have to be in community.
Well, on a sister station, not affiliated with this station, but next weekend, we're going to have an opportunity to talk about it a lot, because I think you know that I'm going to be on Jim Campbell's business show.
Yes.
And that's broadcast to 350 stations around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But where he tapes it, and certainly where we have a lot of relationships, is in Greenwich at WGCH. And I don't know what the rules are here in terms of talking about other media. But
We can.
Yeah, we can, I guess. But that's 1490 AM in Greenwich, and they're live streamed as well.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, what an opportunity when you think about it, that it wasn't that long ago that general criminal justice issues are not something you're going to talk about in polite company.
Yeah.
And if it was talked about, it was kind of with the sensationalism. And Jim has had a lot of guests on the show that have written books about it, and both from the standpoint of having been incarcerated and having been experts about incarceration. And, you know, he's giving us the time on this coming weekend. It'll be broadcast on Sunday night and on Monday night to, you know, to talk about the specifics and what it is to be a fallen business person, or in my case, a fallen lawyer, and then how to march our way back to some kind of redemption by finding a different place in the world. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that's remarkable.
Well, that, you know, that's interesting, because I wanted to talk a little bit about the Bridgeport mayor running for governor.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Well, we invited him, by the way.
I know.
I sent.
He'll come, because he's been here a couple of times talking to Paul Bass.
Yeah.
So about his candidacy.
Yeah.
But we want to talk about, you know, how do you make the decision based on the history of things? And, I, you know, on the one hand, I'm like, you know what? That's an amazing sort of thing to sort of say, I'm not going to let that hinder me and my goals. Like, I still have this goal and this dream, and I want to do this thing, and I'm not going to let what has happened in my past deter me from pursuing what I think is, you know, something I'm quite passionate about.
Well, I think it's, I mean, just from our own personal experiences, I mean, we know it's complicated.
I mean, I'm never going back into politics.
I'm never going back to law.
And I'm never going to run for office ever again.
But it's more complicated than a single decision. Gee, you know, you scratch yourself your head. What am I going to do after being mayor of Bridgeport as a second chance mayor? I think I'll go be governor, you know, or at least I'll run for governor, and all the slings and arrows that come along with that, because, you know, he's already taken a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I saw commentary over the last couple of days that it's arrogant of him to run for governor. And, you know, I don't see it that way.
I don't either. I mean, I really don't. And not because you know, I've served some time. I just feel like, listen, we pay lip service to people sort of getting their lives back and doing what they do.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, in this state, it would be remarkable, because usually we have governors who go to jail after they've been the governor. So in this case, we just happen to have one who's willing to own up to his mistakes.
Yes.
So we invite, look, by the way, just, you know, full disclosure, I'm co-chair of his reentry advisory committee in Bridgeport. And so I've had an opportunity to work with him and his team there.
Mm-hmm.
But we reached out to Kim Staley yesterday, I think, to ask mm-hmm. her if the mayor would come on and talk about it. And they certainly understand that the goal of the show is to go deep.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he's really willing to talk about his experiences, I mean, I don't know if as a candidate running for governor, we're going to kind of drill down into his prison experiences, but certainly his inner motivation. I mean, why would even someone want to run for mayor? Why would one want to run for anything, you know, and what is it about that?
Well, I mean, I imagine it takes a great deal of thick-skinnedness, because everywhere you go, you know that question is going to come up.
Everywhere.
You know, no matter what you do, and maybe come up several times in the conversation, it, you know, regardless of what you say or whatever, like, they could be talking about infrastructure and you know, and building infrastructure, and then somebody will say, and.
Yeah, of course. Well, isn't that true on some level of you and me? I mean,
absolutely.
Not that it comes up all the time, but we've got to be prepared for the fact that it's going to come up.
It comes up a lot. And it comes up a lot, and people allude to it. Sometimes they don't say it outright. They'll just allude to it, you know, mm-hmm. or somebody will, somebody will send me a message with a Google search of my name, letting me know that I was, you know, and I'm thinking, well, I already know.
Yeah, because you know. Really?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I already know this information. I'm not hiding. You know, that's the thing. I don't hide it.
There are a lot of our compatriots who are hiding. You know, and to each his own.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not.
And I'm not saying that people, you know, Jeff, have to come out and wear the banner, you know, wave a flag and say, you know, I did this thing. Mm-hmm. I think people have a right to live how they want to live without having to, you know, carry the weight of whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, honestly, Bab, when I first met you and we were doing the editorial for the book, The Justice Imperative, How Hyperincarceration Destroyed the
American Dream.
American Dream. You were much more of a lifestyle person than you were a criminal justice advocate. I mean, I think this is part of your journey.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it, you know, it took me a minute to figure out where I wanted to be in this whole conversation.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Honestly, because I didn't feel like, you know, I only served 29 days. So that, you know, that's not time as a, up against somebody who has served months, years, decades kind of thing. So, you know, I don't get to whine about the time that I served because it was a month less.
You know, I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is that you had a life-altering experience which called upon you to be completely adaptive to a new way of living. And you know what you can't go back to, and you have, and like any of us, you have to forge ahead into something new and get through the part where you've mourned the past and you're afraid of the future and you're living in that liminal space in between. And, you know, it's like you don't say to someone who's had a heart attack, well, you didn't have a big heart attack, or someone who's went through a divorce, oh, but you didn't go through a messy divorce, or whose child, you know.
But that was my initial point. Yeah. Like, I didn't feel like I had enough credibility to talk about this issue.
Yeah.
But the experience of what happens to people after the fact was very much as if I served a whole bunch of time.
Yeah.
So I've come full circle with it. So the Criminal Justice Insider, the radio show, is my way of sort of being the advocate that I think makes sense for my life.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know. So.
Well, but, and you're also a you know, a well-known and popular person in these circles. I mean, let's call it what it is. So the truth is that with that huge amount of hospitality and welcome you have, you actually can invite people into the conversation that might not come into it in quite the same way.
That's true, Jeff. And I think this is the joy of doing this particular show, is that we get to, I don't want to say normalize criminal justice, but we certainly introduce it into community in a way that it hasn't been. I think it becomes part of the larger dialogue of what community is.
Yeah.
It is no longer on the fringes. We can't just think about people who are coming out as, you know, those folks over there. I think the introduction is here. Sit at the table with us, and we gonna get to the table, and y'all gonna come with us, and everybody's gonna talk to us.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my personal missions is to bring the affluent community and the inner city together, you know, around the conversation of criminal justice specifically, but more about creating empathy and compassion and understanding touchstones of commonality. And so our friends at the Nantucket Project, I've spoken for them three times already, twice up in Nantucket and once up in Greenwich.
I'm going one year. They're going to have to invite me.
And then they've actually given me the opportunity.
I know they only invite one black person a year, but I'm going to be in that
That's
number.
That's not true. That's not true. They invite two. No, that's not true. So, Tom Scott, if you're listening, that's not, we know, we're just fooling around. But this Sunday night, I'm going to be leading something called TMP Conversations at the Greenwich Historical Society.
I saw that.
And this is an opportunity. I mean, what they're doing is, I gotta my hat's off to them, really, because, you know, a lot of people do things to make money.
Mm.
And it's clear what they're doing is they're trying to change the world from in the way that they know how, or they're willing to experiment doing it, and they're not afraid to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So what they had was this idea have conversations in the round, maybe 20, 30 people in a room.
I know. I went to the one, you invited me to the one that they had in on the polo grounds.
No, no, that wasn't that conversation. That was the full-fledged,
that was
the show.
That was amazing.
No, that was the like, show. There were 300 people there.
I know.
No, that was the show.
I was blown away.
No, but this is more intimate. This is like sitting around. There'll be hundreds and then ultimately thousands of these conversations in people's living rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And they're around topics of the day. They're topical. It's kind of like salons used to be in old Paris back in the Beaux-Arts period.
Yeah.
And here we are now in Greenwich, for example. And I'm going to have the opportunity. Well, first of all, we watch a movie that is evoking of certain feelings. It's an emotional video presentation. And then I get 15 minutes to tell my story. And then the people sitting around, it becomes a conversation. It's a moderated conversation just to provide some structure. But what an amazing thing for 20, 30, 40 Greenwich people to be sitting around and to be talking about forgiveness, because that's the topic of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it calls to question, at least for me, whether or not we can not just talk about forgiveness as if it's an object, you know, like in church or synagogue or whatever, you know, we are forgiving people or we've been forgiven. But here we have to actually demonstrate the ability to forgive. We have to be willing to accept people with all their warts and all their problems. And it might not work. I mean, I think that's the brilliance of what they're doing at the Nantucket Project, is they're trying things and they're trying to figure it out. And I'm when I say I'm grateful and honored to be speaking on their behalf for the fourth time this Sunday, it's because I feel honored to be affiliated with them, for not just because they put on these lavish and huge and interesting conferences and videos and things, but because they're trying to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you know, storytelling is a big deal now.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think it's always been a big deal. I've just been introduced to it in a much more intimate way. You know, I was part, you know, Bill Graustein does this storytelling piece.
Oh, yeah.
And I got invited to a couple of years ago and participated and then went on retreat with them and did it. And so Dr. Karen DeBose Walton and her husband, Kevin Walton, just started Storytellers New Haven, where they are just bringing two people together once a month to tell their stories. And it's an amazing experience. And
yeah.
I think that is a wonderful way to build community, because I think if you don't hear people's story, you run around with misinformation.
Yeah, sure.
And I think storytelling is the way to go. And when you hear somebody's story, it makes them so much more humane to them. And it connects you back to them, because something in that story or their story will resonate with you.
Exactly.
I was one of the, I did their first one, me and Eric Clemens from Concat.
Yeah.
And he told a story about his father's relationship with his father over the years that was non-existent, and he finally met him before he died.
Oh.
And it was, it's a story that we hear about in the Black community a lot, but to hear it in a bigger context was a beautiful thing. And then I talked about the experience I had adopting four children. I could have talked about any number of things.
Of course.
November was National Adoption Month, so I just picked that topic. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm a member of the Institute Library, and they have a storytelling component. So maybe this is a good way for the criminal justice community to elevate the conversation around telling stories or getting people to tell their stories about what has happened to them, and maybe make some headway into understanding how people got to where they are.
Well, we certainly give that opportunity to people here. I mean, I think that one of the things that has, one of the reasons why the show has taken off and we're attracting sponsors. Thank you. Why don't you take this moment to do the half show?
If you just tuned in, you are listening to Babs Rolls Ivy and Jeff Grant on the Criminal Insider on WNHH 103.5, sponsored by
Family Reentry, serving the justice community since 1984, and
the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven.
Now more than ever. All right. But, you know, never in a million years when we were thinking about the show and we were lining up guests, and we knew we wanted Robin Porter to be our first guest,
mm-hmm.
For a lot of reasons. I would say not just because she's a New Haven fixture and someone who's recognizable here, but she's done incredible work up at the legislature, and she has an intense personal story.
Yeah.
So for her to have come on here and talked about her son's incarceration and what her feelings were. And to me, the one moment of that show that stood out most for me was when she talked about how, as a black woman, how she has to raise her black sons not to get killed out there on the street.
Oh, that's my story too. I mean, that, you know, I think black mothers and fathers have been doing that since, you know, the Middle Passage. I mean, we've always had to, you know, the goal, we tell our kids, the goal is to get home.
Mm.
The goal is always to get home.
Mm.
And I don't know if anybody else has to bear that weight.
Mm.
You know, not
in this country, probably.
Not in this country that's not at war. There's no civil war.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, I bet Palestinian mothers and other kinds of mothers,
sure,
and have to tell their kids, you know, listen, we're in the midst of war, and just mm-hmm. be thoughtful and mindful. Mm-hmm. But we're not at war, although America is at war with us.
That's it's chilling.
You know, America's at war with us, and you know, over the weekend I saw the 63 black people arrested on some minor marijuana charges.
Mm.
And, you know, you hear Jeff Sessions talking about, let me double down on cracking down on marijuana use. Like, you know, what do they call that, Jeff? Creative use, recreational use.
Recreational use.
In states that already said it's legal to have marijuana.
Well, the governor of Colorado this morning on the news was talking about how when Trump was stumping for when he was running, and he came out to Colorado, and he claimed to be a state's rights advocate, and that he would leave the control of marijuana to the states. And you know, we're trying to avoid the depths of politics here and taking, you know, positional politics in the show, because certainly it's a bipartisan issue, criminal justice, and we want to be careful. But if they're going to start arresting people for marijuana possession, recreational use, I mean, it's going to be another big problem for the criminal justice community.
It is, and the repercussions are going to be long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at all the people who are serving all these ridiculous amounts of time
mm-hmm.
for marijuana mm-hmm. use and mm-hmm. Sales and all that kind of stuff from two decades mm-hmm. ago. So, I mean, I just find it unconscionable that he would double down on this.
Mm.
Of all the things that we need to be concerned about, that this is back on this quote-unquote war on drugs, marijuana becomes a cornerstone of that. Not the opioid crisis that's decimating people's lives and people are actually dying from.
Yeah.
But marijuana, which no one dies from, and no one is jumping off buildings and robbing banks and all this other kind of stuff off of some pot.
Or maybe a few. I don't know.
Well, pot laced with stuff, but yeah. Pure pot. I mean, you know, potheads just want to sit down and relax.
Listen, I'm 15 years sober. I don't go near anything anymore. But 16 years ago, you should have saw me.
Yeah. Listen, we've all done our time with whatever the substance was or is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm concerned about that, because, you know, we're starting to see in this country numbers of incarcerated people, the rolls are going down.
Yeah. Or so we're told.
So we're told. But then, you know, I pay attention to the for-profit prisons, that their stocks have gone up, have increased when they were going down, and now they're ratcheted back up.
But look, the reality in this country is that there's not a single bed that isn't full in a prison. And so even if the roles of prison inmates are actually going down as a technical matter, someone's in that bed within a millisecond on an immigration detainer. So whether we call them immigration detainees or prison inmates, we are locking up people, and someone is profiting from that, whether it's public, private, or whatever. And
that's true.
You know,
whether it's public or private, doesn't matter. Somebody is profiting.
Somebody's profiting. And from our standpoint, you know, we're just doing what we can here. I mean, this is a part of the media. This is a media show.
Mm-hmm.
And so we invite people on to talk about these things. And the fact that we happen to be subject matter experts on some of it is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily, what we don't want to do on the show is to be the expert on any specific area.
But invite those experts on. I never feel like I'm an expert in anything.
Yeah.
And I welcome people coming on to sort of enlighten and educate and inform, because I don't know everything. And, you know, and just since doing this show, I've learned so much.
A lot, right? A lot.
I was like, I had no idea.
A lot.
I mean, from having Commissioner Simplewan to Lorenzo Jones to the women from the roundtable, from the work group.
The Women's Resettlement Working Group.
Yes.
Jackie Lucibello and Amy Smoyer, the professor at SCSU.
And to hear the Miss Lucibello tell her story.
Oh.
And tell it with such she just laid it out there. You know, trying to get her kid back and get her stay clean and all these kinds of things and the challenges of motherhood. That we don't hear those stories.
You know, we've seen a lot of courage. Even in the short,
a lot of courage.
Even the short time we've been doing the show, we see courage and all kinds of. We had the commissioner come on and talk about his son's passing away,
yeah,
and how that informed that he actually went to his son before he passed away and told his son that he had doubts about becoming the full-time commissioner. At the time, I think he was the acting commissioner, the interim commissioner, and he found the resolve and the strength in his son's and his wife's advice to him to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wow,
yeah,
wow,
like, yeah.
I mean, it's not just that it happened, but he talked about it.
I mean, I just think just the fact that he came on just changed my whole perspective of folks who are running the prison system in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Because I like a lot of people. I just thought they were like mean old people like Shawshank Redemption, you know?
Oh my God.
Just like they don't care. They're not going to care. They're just going to warehouse people. And he really was so, you know, I just felt like he was a lovely man.
Human, right? Like
human,
real.
He cares about people.
Yeah, sure.
And is willing to sort of like, I'm gonna go see what they're doing over there in other parts of the world around incarceration.
Yeah.
And see what I can take back from these travels and implement them here. So I was moved by that. And if we could get more people thinking about that kind of thing, I think it would bode well for criminal justice. You know, we at some point we're going to lock ourselves out of progress if we keep locking up people the way that we do. Even though we're enjoying in Connecticut a 50-year low,
a 50-year low in inmate count. Yeah, we're under 14,000 now,
and I'm impressed. And then I saw the piece on parts of Rikers is about to be closed. Is that accurate?
I don't think I read that article, but I can tell you that Rikers census is about half of what it was a few years ago. And there's reasons for that. I mean, a large part of incarceration, including at York up in our women's prison up in Niantic, and Rikers, it's people who are poor people who can't afford bail or who can't afford attorneys to be released. And it's also, it used to be a lot of youth. And it's pre-sentence. They haven't even been convicted of anything.
I'm interested in the bail, folks.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because I didn't even know that was such a... I had no idea if you can't make bail, you have to sit.
You have to sit.
And so many people cannot make these exorbitant amounts of bail.
Well, we have a new cash bail law here in Connecticut, and I'm interested to see how that... I don't know all the particulars yet, but it came into effect January 1st, I think, and we'll find out what that means.
Good. Well, we'll have to tap those folks. And
Maybe we'll get the people from Yale. You know, they have the Yale bond.
Yes. And, you know, somebody, I think Beatrice Cordiani connected me to them at one point.
Yeah.
I'm going to go follow back up because I really want to, because that really is a big civil rights issue around people not being able to make bail. And I've, you know, there's lots of pockets of ways that people can help people make bail. Mm-hmm. I saw an app. There's an app that allows you to help pay for somebody's bail.
Yeah.
I know Jay-Z did a great deal around getting folks out for Thanksgiving. So that they could be with their families, you know, just to make bail.
Sure.
Right? To make bail. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, so
you know what I'm finding? We have maybe 10, five, 7 more minutes left in the show.
Yep.
And so, and what I'm finding is that I'm really enjoying connecting with you. You know what I mean? And when we have a guest here, we don't quite do this the same way. You know what I mean?
Right, because we want to focus on the guest.
Yeah.
We want to get their story out.
And you know, it's a lot of people who come up to me and talk to me about the show. And what they've said to me, what we like most about the show is the chemistry between you and Babs.
I know, I get that too.
You know? And because they don't really know that we're really good friends and we do things.
We hang out. And...
Yeah. But the thing is, when we have a guest here, it's like, I want to say, like, you know, really, this is what you have to say. But you think you can give Babs and I a few minutes to talk?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I think that's probably what we'll do. Give people a little bit of that in some way, either at the beginning of the show or the end of the show or whatever. Just to, you know, well, I mean, this is new. So we are crafting as we go.
Well, maybe we don't let the guests come in till like 9:15.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, like they leave them out there in the waiting room, like in a chute.
In our green room.
Yeah, we have a green room already. I wish we could spin the camera around so you could see the green room.
We have a green room.
Yeah.
So we can bring people out to the green room.
Yeah,
and,
I think Harry Draws is sitting out there in the green room right now. Our engineer Harry. Hey Harry.
Hey Harry. So So that might be a nice idea to sort of do that. But you know, we're building the ark as it's on the water.
Oh my God.
So there's no like, oh, we're going to build this and then we're going to sail. No, we are building as we sail.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we had conversations about the format before we started.
Yes.
And then we did that one trial run show.
Yes.
Like a month before.
Yes.
And people connected with that right away. I think that we heard from the Community Foundation of Greater New Haven after that first show.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't even after the Robin Porter show.
And I, you know, just like you, I've been solicited by lots of people who like to come on.
Now,
and talk. And I was like, you know, we only do this show twice a month.
Actually, listen, with all humility and gratitude, I want to tell you that simply giving me like half a sentence on Facebook saying, I'd love to be on your show is like not enough information.
Yeah.
You know, like email us some to go on. Some
absolutely.
Package,
and you can reach us and we're both accessible. To,
very accessible.
You know?
Yeah.
So tell us tell us your story.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll figure it out.
Oh, you know, I heard the other day from the great Larice Harvey.
Oh, how is she? She's my Facebook friend.
I know. I love Larice. I mean, Lynn and I love Larice, you know, and she's doing great. So, you
know, we'd love to have her on.
Yeah, well, she's in Ohio right now, but, you know,
maybe she can call in.
She can call in. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's brilliant. You know, she used to work with Lorenzo.
Oh.
At a Better Way Foundation.
Okay.
So, yeah, so you know, they're tight.
I've been following Lorenzo since the time he was on, because I didn't know who he was. And I enjoy him.
Oh.
I do it. He's one of those people, he's just so engaging. So
it's a walking encyclopedia.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was like, who is this smart all the time?
Yeah. Well, it's right. I think he thinks I'm his grandfather or something.
Well, Jeff, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah,
we've got more things coming up in the new year.
Yeah, lots of things coming up.
More guests, and we're going to do cooler stuff. And here comes Harry trying to boot me off.
Harry, is it time? Are we there?
Yes, we are there.
We're there. Okay. All right. So
let me shout out Phil Brown. Thank you for letting us use your music without a whole lot of hassle. We love your CD, and I love your music. So thanks for letting us play it. What else, Jeff?
I guess we'll sign off. Listen, anyone wants to reach me, you can reach me at jeffgrant@familyreentry.org. And I would love to hear from you. And especially if you want to be on the show, send me. Or Babs, what email do you use for this?
Oh, Lord have mercy. MediaBabs@gmail.com.
Yeah, MediaBabs.
And then, I know I have a Love Babs, Love Talk on WNH something radio. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Thanks, Harry.
Y'all can find me on Facebook.
Hmm.
So, and thanks, Andrew, for listening in. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Babs. Love you.
Love you, too.
All right.